Hello and welcome to this special podcast for Pie and Vinyl. I'm James Sandy, and in the next half hour I speak to Art Magic, the new indie project from seasoned duo Richard Oates and Sean McGee. There's also a chance to hear some of the live set they performed with nothing but voice and guitar, a truly unplugged experience. Hiding amongst the acetate at Southsea's favourite record cafe, I started by asking them about Art Magic as a project and their new album, which was released in early July. Sean, Richard, Art Magic. Tell us a bit about Art Magic, because it's a kind of, it's not a brand new adventure. You've started sort of around 2008, is that right? You kind of came together a couple of years ago.
Yeah, it took a little while to get to the point where we were ready to get the album made properly, because to start with it was just let's write some songs. And then it turned out the songs were really great, so it was let's write some more songs, and we were fitting it around other things. And then at a certain point we committed and said this has to be something, it's too promising. And then we started making the record properly until early 2010.
Yeah. So it's been brewing for a while.
It was, yeah. There were kind of, you know, other projects going on with Sean initially. He was doing Tempo Shark and stuff like that, and the Gadstones as well. You're working with them quite.
They're now a band called Auto Heart.
Auto Heart, who are great. Don't think their album's out yet, is it?
But, no, still waiting. It's finished for nearly a year.
But he was doing that, so I was kind of sitting around twiddling my thumbs, waiting for a weekend or a Sunday night when he'd be free. We'd try and write a song, you know.
Yeah.
And then by the time we thought we had enough for an album, we thought, okay, let's start recording this properly. Pretty much exactly coincided with Sway getting the offer to do the gig at the Albert Hall, and then consequently reforming. So it was kind of then he sort of had to wait for me to be available. So there's been things, you know, getting in the way a bit of the flow of it, but we still managed to get it all done and dusted in 2011, didn't we, and mixed and everything.
Yeah, we've got like an EP under our belts as well. That was I Keep On Walking, which came out in May last year, May 2011, and that was like a deliberate attempt to sort of start off with something a bit different. So it was like it's a trilogy of songs, effectively, about three people, where the basic idea is that there's a guy who's left his girlfriend for another guy, and it's a song from each of their perspectives. And then we also did we have a song called Heaven Is Here, and we did like a slower, spookier version for the EP. So it was quite nice to start with something that wasn't just the obvious.
Yeah, flagship first single. I didn't want to do that because it's just, you know, that's, you have to follow that with a kind of front-loaded 90s indie record, and I didn't want to do that. I've done it before, and he's got no interest in that. So
you did. You performed earlier Heaven Is Here as a kind of start of your set, which I have to say sounded fantastic.
Thank you.
I think there was something about the ambience of the place as well, in terms of kind of playing small venues, brings different things out of different people. And you sort of at the moment going around the map playing some curious places.
Yeah, we've been sort of doing the middle class greatest hits of England, haven't we? Because we've done everywhere, basically anywhere that can support a good quality independent record shop like Pie and Vinyl here in Southsea. We've been doing those. So we've done David's Records in Letchworth Garden City, Rise in Bristol, Rise in Cheltenham, Banquet Records in Kingston upon Thames, and then here in Southsea today. And we hopefully are going to be doing a second single in October.
We'll have a few more coming up in October as well,
which is when Down in the River comes out as a single, so we're already starting to schedule things for then.
Tell me a bit more about the album, which is Become the One You Love. Tell us a bit more about the kind of ethos of that.
There's an American author called David Levitt who I just totally adore. He's easily my favourite author, and his first novel is a book called The Lost Language of Cranes, and there's a sequence in that is that one of the characters is constantly working on this doctoral thesis about lost languages, which she just never ever gets to the end of. She's just always working, and eventually she gives it up. But at one point she finds out about this French baby who's been abandoned by his junkie mother and has been imitating the cranes outside the window, and had proved impossible to socialise later because the only world he knew was the cranes, the noise of the cranes, the look of the cranes, and he would imitate them. And so it's saying that we each find what it is that we want to love, and we become it. Whatever it is we love, that's who we are. And I thought, that's great.
Wow, that's quite a backstory, isn't it? I didn't quite expect that. So, tell me a little bit about kind of Art Magic as a. I'm tempted to say a project rather than a band. You know,
then you get the gold star.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, okay, that's how I've been. How I was quite adamant that we should present it as a project. I think, you know, Sean was as well, because it's sort of, there is such a stigma attached to forming a new band, and kind of you're immediately in a kind of rut that, you know, that we are a new band and we're doing these band things, and we're kind of, I don't feel that we had any of that. We, you know, the phrase band usually means a certain attitude, a certain image, a certain kind of way of going about doing things, a certain kind of, you know, you've got to kind of hit the press with a few quotes, and we were just never about that at all. It was just let's write some songs. So it was a songwriting project that became, when it came into the public domain, became something as focused as a band, but because it's just the two of us really that do all the kind of creative work, I don't see it as a band. I see it as a kind of coming together of ideas, you know.
Was some of that harder given the kind of heritages that you have individually? Obviously, you know, you're known for
I'd done the whole band thing, and that definitely kind of sort of affected my attitude, you know, towards it. I didn't want to join another band. I kept saying this to Charlie, who's our manager, who's been my manager for years. I don't just want to join another band. I want to do something different, you know. And it's just, you know, that I think that's quite a natural reaction against having been kind of, you know.
Is there something about mellowing as well in terms of kind of, as you get older? I know you're not ancient, but you catapulted into a big band at a young age. Is there something now you think, well, actually, I need to kind of...
Well, you just sort of naturally want to sort of broaden out from that. You want to sort of see how else you can go about your career. I spent a long time in the intervening years before I got together with Sean, writing music, but still thinking, what the hell am I going to do with this? What am I going to do? You know, where's my career going to go? I don't just want to do another band thing, but that's just, you know, what do I do instead? Do I become a composer for films? And there's no way I could do that. You know? I wanted to carry on. I wanted to be a songwriter, you know, and I will always, in one way or another, be a songwriter.
But tell me something about that relationship as well, because I always find it fascinating how singer-songwriter partnerships come together, and I think it can be a difficult relationship at start. You know, it can be. It's almost like going on a date, isn't it? Initially,
it to being a life model. You have to remember that I'm a jobbing songwriter. That's one of the things that I do as my living. So I am used to having total strangers coming to the studio and turning up and having to write a song, and I liken it to being a life model where you can't just sort of get all nervous and stand there in your dressing gown, you've got to strip off and just say, where do you want me, and just get down to business.
Look
straight
at me,
away.
I'm enormous.
No, that's not what I mean at all. And so that process is quite easy for me. I mean, it was a bit more intimidating because I was a fan of Richard's prior work, in a way that when I might be working with some new pop singer who's just quite young and, you know, you haven't learned anything about them yet to get excited about it. That comes later in the process. So there was that feeling in the back of my mind, it's like, I must not do a bad job here, I must get this right. But, you know, we both write songs, it's what we do, it comes quite naturally. So on that first day, we wrote Forever and Negative, which is our first single, which came out in the week. And I think that having established quite early on that we were able to write something of that calibre, it was pretty obvious we were going to carry on.
There's a kind of chemistry that you can
completely
detect.
Yeah, absolutely.
When you're young, you go it alone, it doesn't feel strange. But once you breathe the thin air of love, you're never the same.
Mentioned some of the literary influences, particularly the album. In terms of musical influences, I'm always loath to suggest who people sound like because it always gets people's backs up. But for me, there are elements of Pink Floyd, very early Pink Floyd, and potentially some later
works.
Pink Floyd. But also people like Mercury Rev. It struck me that there are particularly the vocal range. What kind of things were you trying to get to? In terms of the sound, were there people that
we never
you
really
to...
sat and talked about it? We just sort of did it, didn't we? Really?
I think probably influences bled through. There are bands that we both love, like
there
Granddaddy.
There were things in the air, John Grant,
Field Music, and you know, even TV on the Radio. You know, their first couple of records.
We were really into things like Portishead's third album. Was big. We were really into In Rainbows as well.
Yeah, and then the King of Limbs came after that. Yeah. So go home and listen to the new Radiohead. I'll admit, you know, I do listen to them very hard.
But it's more like, I mean, we don't wear them on our sleeve. I mean, you said earlier about a kind of mellowing process. I mean, on the surface, you could see the album as being quite soft-edged. But actually, it deals with a lot of really thorny emotional stuff. You know, it's not an easy listen if you listen to the words. I'm working through a fair amount of things and singing, you know, a lot of things from my own experience that have been difficult for me. So it's in our nature to not make it too difficult and hard and distorted and...
you know, we don't want to put barriers up for people, but it is actually, there's quite a lot of depth there that isn't just on the surface, really.
I have to say, I thought your vaudevillian, if that's a word, kind of presentation of your vocal, it's quite amazing. Almost like we're in a circus, in a positive way.
In a situation like this, where you're playing in a sort of a very, very small space, which is full of people, and not in a way where you're on a stage and they're standing in front of you.
Yeah.
You have to give them something. You can't just sort of stare at the ceiling and sing the songs. And
which is what I do.
And I realized very quickly I have to try and engage everyone who was there. Hmm. So I try and give it a bit of movement and move around and actually direct the songs at the people who have taken the time to come and listen to us. I don't want to just stand there passively and sort of sing it for myself, and, you know, if they like it, it's a bonus, because who wants that in life? No, I want people to get into this. I want to communicate.
I have to say, I did have that kind of fantastic thing where you could kind of feel your heart thumping as you were kind of going along, which is good. I think that's good. That's positive in live music. Moving on, just talking about kind of music industry, you know, obviously we're in a store that plugs vinyl and sells vinyl and cherishes vinyl.
Yeah,
music industry is kind of varied, complex, and quite difficult, isn't it? Is it more challenging now for new projects and new bands and new artists to get things out and to reach out to an audience?
Well, I think actually getting things out is easy.
Mm.
Because anyone can pay artists without a label £50 to put on iTunes.
Yeah.
Putting stuff out is actually easier than it's ever been.
Yeah.
That's actually, I think...
Getting it heard, that's the thing. I think that is now the... I don't think that when bands start now, they have that thing of viewing the music industry as a nut to crack. You know, we've got to conquer this and get on top of it.
We have to get signed.
Yeah.
And all getting signed has kind of evaporated.
It's kind of like a mission. I think nowadays the mission is getting your stuff heard. And I think that as many people you can get to hear it, you know, whether they like it or not, is that's the kind of, you know, reaching out and touching people. That's the challenge now.
Or as close as it gets. I was in love, she was all I could want, but that's not how it ends. Oh, when I would rest my head on her breast, I won't deny she could tempt me to life with the slightest caress. I was the same somehow as I am now, but love doesn't check, it only connects.
Do you have a kind of record mode that you use when you're out and about in terms of, you know, do things strike you as inspiration for songs, or do you kind of...
Oh, all the time. I mean, I carry a notebook everywhere I go. I'm always singing into my phone.
Mm.
You gather up ideas as you go. I actually find the best ideas the ones where quite often I will have written, like, a long, long, long thesis for a song rather than any lyrics or a load of titles. And then they'll just sort of sit quietly and ferment in my mind, and then Rich will bring something over.
Mm.
I mean, You is a good example of that. I had tried to write You it for ages, just as a kind of freeform thing without any melody or anything, and it was like I had gotten to the core of what I wanted to be about, but I hadn't expressed it properly, and I knew I wanted to write a song with that title. I knew what I wanted to say.
It's getting the right res in the right order, isn't it?
And so you brought the music and I just straight away, we wrote the melody in about 15 minutes probably.
Yeah.
But then it was like a month worth of me every day on the words.
And how about you, Richard? Do you kind of strut along and think, oh, that lamppost looks like a G chord? Does it work
no,
like that?
No, it's like, well, I got asked this the other day, and it's like, there is no kind of imagery. I think I think a lot of musicians, people who just write music, their inspiration comes from feelings, you know, and the feelings you get from looking at the world around you. But it's not imagery that's in your head when you express the music. It's the feeling that the imagery gives you, as it were, you know. So it's quite formless music, and I think that's what makes it quite a powerful art form.
Mm.
A lot of different people can get a lot of different feelings from a piece of music, you know.
I'm with you on this, because I'm not very visually driven. musically. A lot of people will close their eyes and they can see pictures of things when they listen to the music they love. And
I've never been like that.
Me neither.
It's all just, you know, the kind of swelling it gives you in your chest.
It's more whatever. It's more like kind of colour or a tint or a perfume than it is like a definite image. And it's trying to sort of... And I like the fact that I'm, you know, I have tried to broaden out and think about, you know, painting with sound, which is a terrible... sounds like a cliche, but it is true. It's like you do have this frame you have to work in. You have the two speakers, and you have the highs and the lows and the volumes and the different tones and textures you can make. Mm. And it's like, one thing I think on this record is there's a lot of very fine detail, which I'm very happy with, but I think next time out, I want more action painting. You know, there's a lot of kind of very tight sculpturing on this record. I think next time we want to just tear that down a bit and get a bit more sort of like brash.
Well, you heard it here first.
And I also have an idea for what I want to call the next album, which would tie in with that as well.
Oh, no, don't say it.
I'm not going to say it. I've had it in my head for months.
Last. Song first, title last. I've been saying this for years.
just to finish up, obviously Pie and Vinyl sells pies, and food and music are a heady mix. Have you got favourite pies or favourite dishes that you maybe have before you... perform or we go on stage?
I can't eat at all. Well, he's going to say the same thing, but I just can't eat until usually the next day.
Oh, really?
I'm unable to eat on the day of a performance, you know.
Is that a nerves thing or an energy thing?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, just horrific. That's the way nerves affect me. Just my appetite goes and I can't eat.
I'm laughing. I shouldn't be really laughing.
No, it affects me in different ways. I mean, I don't eat directly before a show. I mean, I'll have something to eat in the afternoon, and then that'll be it until afterwards. And I'll always, like, when we're doing the installs, you'll notice I'll always have bananas and stuff with me to keep my energy afterwards.
You have to be really, really instinctive and quite adrenalised when you perform. Even in a setting like this, it has to be, because adrenaline has to help. And, you know, if you're full of dinner, it
kind of... And as a singer, the worry
you feel a bit sleepy, you know, that doesn't help.
Sleepy and then belching as well if you're singing is a bad look.
And loaded up with coffee, and that's the thing.
Sean, your tea and water combination, I think, was throughout, to keep your vocal cords well on.
Yeah, I'm very old-fashioned like that. I don't sort of, you know, rock up 5 minutes before and just go, oh, I've had a bottle of Jack Daniels. All those kind of rock cliches make me feel a bit sick. I come and I do a good 20-minute, half-an-hour warm-up for my voice. I drink a lot of water. I drink this kind of throat tea that's probably just a placebo, but it seems to make me feel... Ooh, I said the word placebo. But it seems to make me feel good. And so I keep it kind of, you know, hydrated like that. It's all very boring. But in terms of food, I'll tell you one thing I do love. I bake my own bread.
Oh, right.
And that's something I'm very proud of. So I bake... every other week, I bake all the bread I need for the house for me and my husband. And that's like a nice... If it's good for aggression, if you're feeling like someone has wronged you, you can take it out on the dough.
Catharsis.
Yeah. I do none of this bread maker nonsense. I do it the real way.
That's excellent. I wish you all the best for the future. I'm already looking forward to the unnamed second album.
And Sean, unwritten as of yet.
Sean, Richard, thanks very much for talking to me.
Thank you.
Cheers.
For more information on events, culinary delights and choice cuts of vinyl, go to www.pieandvinyl.co.uk. Our thanks to Art Magic for the use of their music in this podcast, which was a King of the Buttons production for Pie and Vinyl.